All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is the Grim Articles Show. I got Dead Penetration here.
What's up?
All right, guys, so we have a long show tonight. We've got a lot to talk about, so let's go ahead and get started. But first thing I want to talk about is the Marvel situation. I don't have this stuff to bring up, but basically I'm going to read from some information that I've got regarding Bo DiMaio. Remember, he was kicked off X-Men 97. So a lot of you guys might wonder, okay, yeah, Marvel did the Deadpool versus Wolverine, which is really good, right?
Yeah.
But what's it actually like working with them? What's it like in their, you know, conferences? And Bo actually had a lot to say about that, dude. So these guys, they're not great. So basically, let's just put it to you like this. Yeah. Give me a second, because I don't want to take it right off of what Bo said. But hold on. Just give me a second, guys. I gotta find it. Okay. Hopefully they'll let me read all of it here. If not, well, we'll see. All right. So basically, he says, to those asking why I'm not so hard on Superman, the answer is I've never worked with Gunn or DC. Like Matt Shankman and the writers of Fantastic Four, I sat in the creative meetings of Marvel Studios. They're horrible. You basically sit in a room with Kevin Feige and Lou D'Esposito and try to pitch your movie while also realizing that Kevin just wants you to dictate his rushed thoughts. Victoria used to be in these, but Kevin and Lou had so mistreated her that in one of my Blade meetings, she just showed up with sugar cookies she baked to help improve morale. You're even told not to pitch ideas from the comics because Lou isn't a big comic guy and it'll turn him off.
Well, then he shouldn't be in a comic movie.
He shouldn't be working with comic movies, right?
No.
And comic properties. You sit and talk about craft and story, and characters only have Kevin and Lou to say, yeah, well, all we need to do is make sure it's fun, and etc., etc. So if you really care about the plot, they don't really care. They just want it to be a fun movie.
I mean,
that's true.
I have far more Marvel characters that I kept up with as a child than I do. DC was always Batman, Superman, you know, occasionally Green Lantern and others. But, yeah, those are the main ones. Supergirl occasionally.
Right.
But, you know, Marvel, you have Deadpool, Spider-Man, Captain America, the Avengers, Iron Man, you know, it just
right.
goes on and on and on.
Right. So he also goes on to say, there's no spark, there's no vision. Marvel is a slaughterhouse factory where you watch fresh meat get spoiled as it slowly makes its way through the assembly gears of mediocre thinking and this weird hatred for their own product. This is why Rob Liefeld isn't just some bitter old man. Talking about comic book writers is met with open contempt. I had to fight to get the Leewalds involved on X-Men 97, and even the dismissive news with which Dana Vasquez Eberhardt spoke about them, basically telling me the OG creators were meant to be seen, not heard, to appease fans. I wanted to co-write an episode with them, and that was Dana's response. I even remember wanting to talk to Chris Claremont. He wanted to talk to Chris Claremont directly, and being shut down, or wanting Joe Madura to do posters, just as I was scolded for being too friendly with fans, or coming off too much as one. This was a meeting where I was pitching that we could use Blade as a chance to pick up the dangling threads from Doctor Strange when it came to Wanda and the Darkhold. We could use Varney and the Darkhold cultists. One of my drafts opened with Deacon Frost tricking some British explorers to trek up to Mount Wundagore, where he does blood magic to reveal the vampire spell used by Varney and his followers during the Days of Cold. It'd start tying some of these threads together. I even had the same monsters from Doctor Strange show up to kill the explorers before Deacon reveals he's a vampire and kills them. Up until that point, he'd been covered against the cold and daylight. This was set before Doctor Strange 2, so a lot of the stuff played ironically, while also having Frost give us more details about C'Thon, who we only glimpsed in Doctor Strange 2. To Kevin's credit, he liked the idea, as well as my pitch that magic is to Blade what snakes are to Indiana Jones. He hates magic. But then Lou felt it was too comic book.
What the fuck is supposed to be?
That man should be thrown out the window. You know that little meme where there's a bunch of guys and they're saying, I want this, I want that. And the one guy says something, they throw him out the window.
He needs to be thrown in a Bonnie Blue film playing the role of Bonnie Blue.
It's a, wow. It's a broken machine, and so I can see where Matt and his team probably had great ideas, only for Marvel's arrogance to destroy them. And he said some other things, too. He had said something along the lines of, he called them executive producers, right? He was being funny. He said, I'll get you that one. Because he's been talking about all this stuff, and it's all very important if you follow comics. And yes, we do a lot.
X-Men 97 did terrible too.
Yeah, but I loved it. I thought it was done real well. And remember, that's the last one that he wrote. The other one he didn't get to write. So okay, he said. All right, just give me a second. He said, I got scolded once for emailing Kevin and the Marvel execs because my email started, greetings, executives. You know, he was trying to be funny. Executives, right? It's a play on words. I was immediately told that Kevin despises being called an executive because he sees him and his parliament as artists. It's hard to honor your characters when that's the priority over a well-meaning X-Men pun.
Well, when you're bastardizing people's childhoods, stop being an artist.
And this is the last one, and this really sucks because what he says works. This is an example of a somewhat decent one. The discussions and fights I would have over X-Men would literally have me drinking at night. I was so stressed, and because they'd make it personal. In season 2, I had a film noir style subplot involving Bishop, Time Cop, and Polaris, Femme Fatale. There was a scene where they go skinny dipping in the Savage Land and Polaris makes a magnetic bubble around them as they start kissing and the bubble goes underwater. I was told by our favorite Marvel exec that I was creepy for writing the scene and that it was Skinamax. My sense, because she seemed to have a ton of issues with black people on the crew and myself, was something about the big black dude with the white woman felt wrong to her.
I mean, I can see that now.
And other people are saying, yes, I've sat at Marvel Studios creative meetings as well, and they're abysmal. Feige just yells at everyone and is rude. DC meetings are much more peaceful. Well, here's the difference, guys. DC gives a shit about the comic books.
The source material.
Gunn is a comic book nerd. He's a fan. Of course. He loves these characters. Remember when we watched... Yeah. Remember when we watched him do the little Superman thing?
Oh,
and
yeah.
He talked about all the... Like, he'll nerd out over this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, he knows the source
material. That's the guy you want to do the stuff.
He knew Guardians of the Galaxy. He did... You think about how good those movies
are. They were great.
And I wasn't ever a huge Guardians of the Galaxy fan, but now I love the movies. I like the source material.
So, also... That's way loud. Okay, so... Also, guys, I had to turn it down just a little, but we have to keep
it. I don't think anyone cares about the music as much as hearing
the fan is the trying to drown out the fan.
Last time you said it didn't matter if the fan was on, that you could hear it at a low tone.
Let's see. All right, we'll put this to a vote. Guys, let us know if the fan is distracting. I'm going to turn the damn music off.
I mean, it doesn't have to be off. Low would be great.
Okay, fine. We'll turn the music back on, but we'll make it low.
Like the quiet storm. So that music deserves to be low.
It's royalty-free shit, okay?
You mix the high with the low.
Okay, so anyway, the thing that's different is with DC, you're getting somebody that actually gives a shit about the characters, really geeks out over them. He loves the source material. Like, this is what you want for these kinds of movies. Like, if I want somebody to build a house for me, I want somebody that wakes up smelling lumber. Right, I want somebody that's all about it. Like, that's
after their years of smelling lumber, you might want to kill yourself.
That's no, I mean, I'm talking about it's so
passionate about their
so
job.
Into their veins that, you know, building and all that kind of stuff. They wake up smelling like the, you know, like work. Like that's what they want in the morning.
Of course, they do shower from time to time.
Yeah, but I'm talking about that's what they get up in the morning. Oh, the taste of lumber in the morning. The smell of...
I can see him eating a 2x4 right now. Got some mustard, Reggie? Reggie always carried the mustard. He got the good mustard.
Okay, I'm just saying, oh, I can smell the 2x4.
Just right. Is it racist to call it yellow wood?
Oh.
Why can't it be, you know, melting pot wood?
Okay. But that's what we mean. We want somebody that actually fucking cares.
Regional diversity wood.
We want actual people that care about these products. And the problem is, we're getting a lot of people that don't give a shit in video games, in movies. And it's gone a lot of people... Excuse me. It's made a lot of people go to watching older movies, you know, or indie movies, or playing older games, or playing indie games. Because the mainstream shit is balls.
It's trying to indoctrinate you.
Yeah, well, it's not only that. It just sucks in general. It's not just because... People saying, it's woke. It's not just that it's woke. It's that it's bad. Like,
it's woke.
Yeah. I mean...
Woke's bad enough, but then you make it
then
bad
you make
on
the
top
game
of woke.
Bad itself, and
then it's keeping you awake because it's
and
so
even
bad.
The games that aren't woke, there's games that aren't woke, but they're not doing well because they have these stupid predatory practices. Oh, you're always online, and by the way, you don't own the game. When we kill the server, we kill the game too.
Yeah, that's why I won't buy anything that's online only.
Yeah, never, ever. So, okay, Lucasfilm and Disney have settled with Gina Carano following her firing from The Mandalorian. Actor Gina Carano has settled her federal lawsuit against Lucasfilm and its parent, the Walt Disney Company, over a claim that she was fired from The Mandalorian in 2021 for expressing right-wing views on social media.
Yeah.
The specific terms of the agreement were not made available. Mrs. Carano was always well-respected by her directors, co-stars, and staff, and she worked hard to perfect her craft while treating her colleagues with kindness and respect, Lucasfilm said in a statement. With this lawsuit concluded, we look forward to identifying opportunities to work together with Ms. Carano in the near future.
I don't know. She wants to be...
I don't know.
...put in that position again.
The two sides stipulated in a federal court ruling filing Thursday that this case should be dismissed with prejudice, meaning it can't be refiled. A judge still has to formally dismiss it. The case has been scheduled to go to trial in Los Angeles in February of next year. The lawsuit... filed in a federal court in California last year, alleged that she was wrongfully terminated from the Star Wars Galaxy Disney Plus series after 2 seasons due to a post likening the treatment of American conservatives to the treatment of Jews in Nazi Germany. Her posts were widely criticized online and spurred a trending Fire Gina Carano hashtag. I'd like to thank you all for your unrelenting support throughout my life and career. You've been the heartbeat that has kept my story alive. I hope to make you proud, Carano wrote in a statement Thursday. I am excited to flip the page and move on to the next chapter. My desires remain in the arts, which is where I hope you would join me.
You know what probably helped this code forward is Snow White.
Well, also Discovery. Discovery had a lot to do with this.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Carano thanked Elon Musk for helping fund the lawsuit and asked for nothing in return. The suit had alleged that the 43... Yeah, we don't care about that. We know what she does.
I do. She's in my age range.
Okay. But there you go. Now, that was her in 2019.
Yeah, she still looks good. She's a UFC fighter.
Yeah, I know that.
I don't know if she thought about going back, but she's still pretty hot.
Okay! Surreal photos of small-town American swingers in the 2000s. Shit. In the early 2000s, Naomi Harris, then a novice just starting out documentary photography, went on a wild journey through the sex party scene of small-town America. The resulting 2008 book, America Swings, is perhaps the greatest documentary project you've never heard of. In many ways, Harris only discovered the scene by accident. She was living in Miami Beach, working on her first major project, capturing the last generation of South Miami Beach's senior citizens. 20 years later, the project became her book, Haddon Hall. In her downtime, she'd visit Holliver Beach, a plot of shoreline set aside for local nudists. Gradually, she noticed a cast of regulars at Holliver, particularly at weekends, who seemed to be good friends with one another. They'd even throw beach parties and meet up for potlucks on the holidays. It was a real community atmosphere, Harris says. I basically connected myself with those people, partially because they were funny and nice, but mainly for safety, as I was 24 years old and caught some pervert filming me. I'm probably on some weird fetish site out there. The Holliver Beach set would always be talking about parties, ones to which they'd been, ones to which they were planning to go. I'm like, why the fuck are people going to all these parties and never inviting me, Harris says. The penny didn't fully drop till a man named Ron asked her to accompany him as his key. Single men weren't allowed to the parties, so he needed a female partner to unlock the door. I'm like, okay, sure, I'll try anything once, Harris says. Good night. The first party took place at a Fort Lauderdale.
Have you ever been to a swingers ball?
Lauderdale called, no.
There's two of them.
Called Trapeze, which was really a set of offices at the end of an industrial strip mall MacGyvered together. There were 10 or so mattresses in the group sex room, none of which matched. There was a Chef Boyardee looking fellow cooking up a storm slicing roast beef at the meat carving station, and crowds of people you would have been in line behind at the supermarket earlier that day or at the bank. Just normal looking people loading their plates, Harris says. After about 20 minutes of dancing, people retreated to the locker room to undress and enter the back rooms. Harris got naked too because she'd just eaten a ton of meat and potatoes.
Yeah, you know how I feel about getting naked after you fucking eat a load of starches and heavy meats.
It was like popcorn ceilings with fluorescent light. It was an office. I'm just like, this is fucked up. When we went back into the group sex room later on, Rod nudges me and is like, it's pretty hot, right? And I'm like, yeah, super sexy, Harris says jokingly. I'm looking around and I'm like, this is the least sexy thing I've ever seen in my life. We left at 3 a.m. As we were leaving, a woman in nothing but heels was getting a prune Danish from the breakfast bar area. I'm like, no one is going to believe me.
If
I have
you've
to photograph
it. If you've ever seen good old-fashioned orgy, they do a really good job showing that kind of lifestyle off. It's funny.
That was the first swingers event she'd been to, but many more would follow. The first party she photographed was Swingstock, a four-day camping fornication festival held in Wisconsin. 500 swingers all camping, kind of like Burning Man in a sense, except in the woods, not the desert, Harris
Boys
said.
Boys Navi.
Everyone is having a good time. I didn't want the pictures to be sexy. That's what erotic photography is about.
Hold this leaf. That's poison oak.
This is documentary photography, Harris says, who by then was compiling shots for America Swings. I didn't want the pictures to be sexy. That's what erotic photography is about. This is documentary photography. So there's one picture in the book I call it Swing in the Forest with Toothbrush, and there's a woman in a swing that's getting, like, manually, you know, whatever. You don't see what's happening because the guy's back is covering, but there's a row of people watching and one of the women is brushing her teeth. And to me, that's just funny. First of all, doing stuff outdoors that's normally done indoors is funny anyway because it's out of place. But having someone in a sex swing and someone cleaning their teeth while watching is just funny. And that's kind of the bulk of the book. There are these funny scenarios, Harris says. The Flusher Throne.
All right. Show up at the orgy and those are the wild ones.
And that's the thing, swingers. They take sex very seriously because that's kind of their pastime. But at the same time, it's like summer camp. They all have a great time. At every swinger party you go to, there's a contest
random women.
Or some kind of component of doing something silly and funny. Maybe at some clubs, it's just like, let's get down to business. But it's not like you see in the movies. There's often themes like it's Christmas time or Halloween, and they do theme parties like leather and lace, and like for the most part, the sex is almost an afterthought. It's really a sense of community. Part of what drove Harris was that she'd never seen anyone photograph the swinger community in a documentary style before. It's a hard community to get yourself infiltrated with, Harris says, so I spent almost 5 years. Swingstock, the first party I photographed, was the summer of 03, and it snowballed from there.
I bet it did snowball.
Give me a minute on that. Kill that Discord.
Oh, man.
Part of what drove Harris was that she'd never seen anyone photograph the swinger. Okay, we talked about that. All right. It was very different then because there were no apps. I had to do a lot of web research. If you were to look at my browser history, it was crazy. A lot of my time was spent researching because I really wanted a cross-section of America, and very specifically, I wasn't interested in big cities. I didn't photograph in New York City. I didn't photograph in Los Angeles. I wanted to photograph in suburbia and small towns because to me, that was more real. Like, you expect people to engage in group sex in a big city. It's just what you do, I guess. I don't know. In small rural areas, that's more interesting. The book was a hustle. One Harris paid for entirely out of her own pocket. Only two of the 40 parties in Harris's book are from magazine commissions. Another was an idea she presented to a writer. They wanted to cover the Mandingos they met at a party in New Orleans, amply sized black men who consensually have sex with white women in front of their husbands. But the publication ultimately went with a different photographer on the shoot. They put a really well-known photographer on it, someone who used a 4x5 camera and had never photographed this subject matter before, he says. And I'm like, fuck you, this is my story. So I showed up at the party because I'm like, I'm photographing it for my book. I don't care if it's a magazine or not, this is for my book. When I photographed, it was a theme party. I would wear whatever the theme was. But if you're not wearing any clothes, where do you put your film? So I always wore a tool belt. I'd be in sneakers, tube socks, a tool belt, and nothing else. And so I turned up at the party, and that was what I was wearing. And she was in jeans and a turtleneck. So the response is very different. All the people knew who I was. I had a reputation, Harris says. If you're not wearing any clothes, where do you put your film? Oh, okay, gotcha. The writer was pissed. He sent a furious email saying he blacklisted her. Well, he didn't blackball me, but the project itself kind of screwed up my career for a while because a lot of people didn't want to work with me when the book came out. Rather than seeing, oh, here's a woman who's capable of getting into really tough situations and ingratiating herself, like, isn't that amazing? Let's send Naomi to this. They're like, oh, she's a swinger, she's perverted. Especially with advertising, all work stopped. In fact, I was on location about to photograph for a big sneaker company, and a couple hours before the shoot, I got a call to pack up and go home. No explanation, just that they'd seen my website and they didn't want me photographing for them. Harris wanted the book to be a huge cultural event, but it didn't blow up like she'd hoped it would. There's one picture that goes viral every year. It's a Super Bowl swinger picture, because what's more American than football, blowjobs, and beer? And I never get any credit. Share the photo, just credit photographers, she says. I think it came out too early. I think the world wasn't ready for America swings, and we are now, maybe. I wanted to get on Oprah. I wanted to be like Tom Cruise and jump on the sofa and Oprah to be like, hey, you know, I wanted this book to be a phenomenon of its own.
Once you realize how fake Oprah is, why would you want to now?
Because it was a big thing.
Oh, it was back then.
The huge reason why you may not have seen these shots before in that universe quite simply conspired to fuck up Harris's plans in a major way. The day this fancy limited edition Tashin book with a foreword by Richard Prince came out, the same day of the Lehman Brothers collapse, the start of the subprime mortgage crisis, essentially the start of the recession. So I had exhibitions in New York and LA that I dropped a ton of money to print, never got any back. It was a disaster. The art world stalled for a bit because, you know, who cares about art when you're losing your stocks and your bonds and everything, literally blowing your financial wad. So that's my luck, Harris says. I spent so much money. I traveled all over America because I had to stay in hotels. I photographed in 38 states. So this was a big undertaking. And no, it was not funded. I don't have grant money. I was stupid. I put it all on my credit card. Thankfully, I paid it off since then. But in 2008, I was like $26,000 in the hole for this. There are a few different scenes with Mandingos in the book. The leader of the Florida Mandingos, Art Hammer. Okay. Drex knows him. Well, I don't know if he knows him, but he knows of him. Wanted to provide Harris with an airtight scene for her to photograph. Use your imagination. They found a white woman and husband who were down, but one of the Mandingos was so well endowed that the woman balked at the idea of letting him have sex with her. That is actually something that happens a lot. I never did get my airtight, but at one point one of the guys was, you know, in her mouth. And then when he comes, he came all over her face, and there's the picture in this book. She's rubbing it on her face and definitely got in her eye. And it's painful when that gets in your eye, Harris says. And her husband's like, come to the bathroom, come to the bathroom. I'm like, oh, he's going to clean her up. He knows it's burning her eye. He cares about her and he takes her to the bathroom. And one of the guys is walking out of the bathroom and he's like, ah, that guy's licking her face. Ugh. Harris begins, yep, he's clean up crew. Harris began making a documentary on Art Hammer and the Mandingos. Vice actually scooped her, but Harris would have done things differently. The story I would have done would have been much more about, like, why are you fucking these white women? Not like, it's, yeah, it's fun, whatever. Like, what happened to you growing up during segregation when you weren't allowed to go to school and drink from water fountains? Why did that make you want to fuck white women? Because you literally fucking the man through the ma'am. I think that would have made a far more interesting documentary, but says LaVie. American Swing shows the real humdrum of the swinger lifestyle and how fundamentally silly and not all that important sex becomes when you make it your whole thing. Yeah, it's true. As Harris says, it's all about community first and foremost. I hope her work in this book get the attention they deserve. The bottom line is, to me, if I eat and live off my work, that's being successful. I'll most likely be well known when I'm 80 or dead. That's the way it is for female artists. I want to continue to make work and want my work to be more than just seen on Instagram. I want people to hang it in their houses and give me new assignments. I haven't worked that much for the past 5 or so years because I was caregiving for my parents. I need to get back into it. I'm also exploring pottery. Currently, I'm making sculptures based on the seniors I photographed at Haddon Hall. Who knows? Maybe I'll make a series of swinger ceramics next. So there you go. Crazy, right? It's a whole thing that still goes on to this day. Yeah. Drex knows a lot about swinger parties. He used to be part of all that lifestyle.
A lot of them being so inclusive, too, is they don't have to worry about STDs as much.
Right.
You know, all kinds of stuff.
Our sons died taking an all-natural supplement you can buy at gas stations. People don't realize it's so addictive and dangerous.
If it came from a gas station,
I know. Months before Jordan McKibben collapsed in his bathroom and never woke up, the 37-year-old prepared smoked salmon and homegrown canned peppers to entertain his big blended family in their quiet Washington State community. Weeks before, he told his mom, Pam Molden, that things were getting serious with the woman he was dating. His one big desire to have kids was finally in reach, Malden recalled. Days before, he helped a friend plant a flower garden for a baby shower. He loved life. He loved doing things outdoors, Malden told the Post. Then on the day of his death, McKibben went to his longtime job at an organic food distributor. When he got home, he mixed a tablespoon of powdered kratom supplement into his lemonade. Mark? Kratom, whatever. Marketed as an all-natural way to ease pain, anxiety, depression, and more, Kratom, which is extremely addictive, by the way, can appeal to health-conscious people like McKibben, who Molden says wouldn't even take ibuprofen for arthritis in his hands. But on Tuesday in April 2022, a compound and substance called mitragynine, took McKibben's life, an autopsy report later showed. When Malden broke into... Mitragynine. When Malden broke into his bathroom after a call from her grandson that day, she found McKibben lifeless. She performed CPR on her own son and shielded her eyes when medics carried his gray body away. I've lost my son. I've lost my grandchildren that I could have had. I've lost watching him walk down the aisle, watching him have a life that I get to watch with my other kids. I've lost enjoying these years with him, Molden said. I have to go to the cemetery, and I hate going to the cemetery. He shouldn't be there, she added. Kratom products, sold in powders, gummies, and energy-looking drinks, coming from a plant native to Southeast Asia and can act like a stimulant at lower doses and a sedative at higher ones. While they're readily found online, in brick-and-mortar stores and even gas stations as catch-all solutions to everything from fatigue to opioid withdrawal, the FDA says kratom and its key components are not lawfully marketed in the U.S. as a drug product, dietary supplement, or food additive. The products, though, are gaining attention on social media as TikTokers reveal disturbing interactions with teens going great lengths to get their hands on drinks like Feel Free. The shot-like capsules of kratom and other botanic ingredients look innocent enough and line some gas station checkouts. Don't buy this shit at gas stations. Yeah. Natural Poison Control Centers documented 1,807 calls about kratom exposures between 2011 and 2017, and it's only been increasing since then. An emergency medicine physician in Florida said. Patients on kratom can have a lot of agitation, sometimes even psychosis, he added. You get sweating, you get dizziness, you get very high blood pressure or elevated heart rate. Ooh, that sounds terrible. On the other end of the spectrum, he noted, people might be totally unresponsive or just extremely drowsy and out of it. That also sounds awful. While documented deaths from kratom are rare and typically involve other substances like fentanyl, Critics say consumers are unaware of Kratom's potential dangers. Manufacturers aren't required to verify if what is listed on the label actually reflects what's inside the product. McKibben, for one, was told it's impossible to overdose on Kratom, that he'd just throw up if he took too much, Molden said. The green cellophane bags he left behind had no instructions or warnings. I find it so frustrating when I get a call from Costco over a lettuce or they have a recall over some potato chip and they pull it off the market, Molden said, whose lawsuit alleges that Kratom is 63 times more deadly than other natural products sold to consumers. There have been hundreds of people killed from this and they don't pull it. The government doesn't step in, she added. An even more potent danger. Experts are especially concerned with a highly potent, highly addictive Kratom offshoot called 7-hydroxymetragenine, or 7-O, which seems to have infiltrated the market in the past year, said Dr. Robert Levy, an associate professor at the University of Minnesota, who is board certified in both addiction and family medicine. Many people don't know the difference. There's always been concern about Kratom because if you take enough of it, it does act like an opioid, and people can become addicted to it and have withdrawals on it and overdose on it and ruin their lives on it, like anyone else that has a substance use disorder. 7-hydroxy, whatever that shit is much more addicting and more problematic. In fact, last week, the FDA recommended classifying it as an illicit substance. It's an opioid that can be more potent than morphine. FDA commissioner said, we need regulation and public education to prevent another wave of the opioid epidemic. In the meantime, according to Levy, parents should be having open conversation with their kids about the appeals, dangers, and addictive potential of Kratom, and the fact that all natural plant-based doesn't necessarily mean safe. Arsenic is also from a plant, he says. As for people who say Kratom helps them wean off other substances and they can control their use and they're getting their life back together, then who am I to judge, he said. I just worry that because they can't control the use of something, the part of their brain that controls the use of psychoactive drugs is fundamentally broken, and I continue to worry that they'll take more and more of it until they develop a Kratom use disorder.
I may have to go here in a minute. What? You know I don't sweat.
Oh.
So it's just overheating me.
Okay. I can...
Thank you.
I can do that.
That'll save my life. Yeah, Matt. Yeah, he died at a taping. Apparently, he didn't sweat when his body says he's hot.
Oh, yeah, that's
because I don't even pee until I'm on dialysis.
Oh wow, I forgot. Okay. If the part of their brain that controls, well, it's...
I mean, it'll get there. I'm about to put my wrist on it. That helps.
On the air. That's where the air. Nothing comes out of that.
Well, that feels nice.
If your child or you or whoever is suffering from a substance disorder, you're not alone, Levy added. Lots of people suffer from substance disorder. There is help. Treatment works. For Jennifer Young, that message came too late. The mom in Columbus, Ohio, first Googled Kratom a few years ago after her son, Johnny Loring, mentioned he was using it for anxiety. What she found didn't alarm her. I saw it's this all-natural, safe alternative, and then people are all like, it's wonderful. It saved my life. Helps with my anxiety. Helps with my pain. It's a cure-all, Young remembered. So I didn't really think it was that bad. Plus, Lorig, a delivery driver for a flooring company who loved fishing and playing guitar, found Kratom helped him stay alert and communicate with his customers. He valued those relationships. Everybody loved Johnny, Young said. He was the kind of guy that would give you the shirt off his back, the last dollar in his pocket. He didn't care if you needed a ride, he'd give it to you. Anything he needed. He would be there for you in a heartbeat. Even when Lorig started having seizures, neither Young nor clinicians traced them back to Kratom. At the hospital, they told me everything was fine and they referred me to a seizure clinic, he added. Lorig never got the chance to go. Weeks later, at age 27, he collapsed during an annual mushroom hunting trip with the men and his family and his new girlfriend. By the time the ambulance got to him, he was dead. Toxicology report revealed deadly levels of mitragynine and gabapentin, prescription painkiller. Oh, wow, he was taking it with gabapentin. The level of Kratom shocked me. It overwhelmed me and made my gut sick, said Young, who later found about 20 packs of Kratom, which he drank with orange juice, around Lorig's room. I didn't realize it was so addicting. See, so one thing, I use supplements, guys, but I would never in my life take that much of anything at one time. Like, yeah. If I take lion's mane, I take, like, one pill. If I take ashwagandha, I'll take one.
For nerve pain.
I mean, I take my vitamins, but I don't take anything else. Like, I took 3 Tylenol at the most today because I had some pain, and that was pretty much all I did. Like, I'll deal with it after that. It's like, if I don't want to push any more Tylenol. A lot of people say, well, it's just a Tylenol. Yeah, but I'm going to take, like, 6 of them.
Yeah,
it's gonna
be real bad. Terrible on your liver and everything else.
And it's even worse if you do it with ibuprofen like people do.
Be your last headache.
Why don't people have taken 20? But that doesn't matter. Anyway, Mike Malden, Young is a pursuing a wrongful death lawsuit, but she added, there's no amount of money I could put on my child's life. After Loring's death last spring, she spent a year in bed and got on antidepressants for the first time. One of her other children has been hospitalized for panic attacks. Christmas was miserable, she said. Our house is silent now. The void of Johnny is just loud, Young added. I just hope that someday I can get back to enjoying things because I know he'd want me to. But right now, I don't enjoy anything. So, gotta be careful with kratom, guys. If you're taking that shit, and I know some of you are, don't even lie to me.
Kratom.
Fucking kratom. You guys know what it looks like. The green shit that looks like... I got pills that look like this that I take supplements, but it don't look like that. I don't take
it
green.
Could be algae.
I wouldn't... Yeah. Yeah, I'd be careful. But it has that my tragedy.
Horny goat weed looks like that.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that later.
What, horny goat weed?
No. That article. Okay, here we are. Young woman can't stop having orgasms, and doctors can't figure out why.
Well, if it ain't broke, you don't fix it.
Come again? Doctors in China say they... What the hell? What happened here?
Well, they can't stop the orgasms.
Anyway.
They're getting the military and emergency...
Doctors in China say they're baffled. That's different. That's a different... article.
I know. Just fucking with you.
I know. Doctors in China say they're baffled over the case of a young woman who experiences uncontrollable organisms.
What? Orgasms?
Yeah, but...
They spelled it organisms.
They spelled it organisms.
Well, that's probably all them organisms sloshing around in there and
shit, yeah, man. Just getting
that
railed.
Dancing the jig on her G-spot. It's fucking crazy.
Multiple times per day, leaving the terminally titillated 20-year-old in a perpetual state of arousal.
I always like the word titillated.
Yeah, I do too. The sexual arousal symptoms are characterized by recurrent and spontaneous orgasmic experiences, wrote Jing Yan and Defang Wang of the Peking University.
He has a Fong Wang? Well, he should get that checked out.
Six hospital
ding dong and ding dang.
In Beijing, in a study of the curious case published in AME Case Reports. Man, I'm thinking of Boomhauer. For 5...
I'll tell you what, man. Organizing all the time, that ain't a problem.
Ding dong, ding dang. For 5 years, the unnamed 20-year-old experienced a stun...
It's the CIA, Hank. I know it.
The unnamed 20-year-old experiences thunder down under sans sexual stimulation, leading experts to deduce that she suffered from persistent genital arousal disorder, PGAD, SciPost reported. While this affliction might sound like hours of fun, constant pleasure can be a pain, causing significant impairment in psychosocial well-being and daily functioning, per the study.
That's why they call it the small death.
This was
too much of it's not good for you.
This was certainly the case with the patient, who reportedly experienced immense distress and was unable to attend school or work or maintain relationships.
Squirts everywhere.
Unfortunately, getting diagnosed with PGAD was a long time coming. Her symptoms first reared their head when she was 14, initially manifesting
as an... Her pants are soaked. No, it's just name.
as an electric sensation in her abdomen, accompanied by pelvic contractions resembling orgasms. Somewhat confusingly, this was around the same time the youngster also began displaying increased sensitivity, coupled with bizarre beliefs such as thinking others could read her thoughts, which led her to getting hospitalized a year later and treated for depressive and psychotic symptoms. Despite multiple remedies, including anti-epileptic and psychiatric medications, the patient's symptoms persisted, leading her to believe that her constant climaxes were caused by external stimuli. By the time she finally reported to the hospital, her condition had snowballed to the point that she could barely explain her symptoms without getting interrupted by an orgasm. Neurologists initially ruled out epilepsy through EEG monitoring and other tests, while physical examination showed no structural abnormalities in her brain and reproductive organs that could have triggered her perennial pleasure responses. Doctors eventually diagnosed the patient with PGAD after a regimen of antipsychotic drugs appeared to mitigate both her big moments and delusions. After several weeks of treatment, the patient's condition improved to the point where she could go back to work and have a social life. But whenever she ceased treatments, her symptoms would come back with a vengeance. Unfortunately, PGAD still flies under the radar. First formally described in 2001, the malady affects a projected 1% of women in the U.S., but remains underdiagnosed. Possible causes include everything from nerves and blood flow to antidepressant medications such as SSRIs. Some have even linked the anomalous ailment to
Isn't that weird? It's so much that kills a man's libido does the opposite for a woman.
Some have even linked the anomalous ailment to an imbalance of dopamine, a neurotransmitter involved in the brain's arousal and reward system.
Is that what dopamine is? Had ADHD, I'm just finding out for the first time.
Oh, yeah. Dosing the patient with the aforementioned antipsychotics likely curbed this dopamine response, thereby lessening her symptoms of arousal. Unfortunately, PGAD has no surefire cure as of yet. Okay. Now that was funny. Hold on, that was funny.
What?
Okay.
People's comments?
The best comment. Unfortunately, getting diagnosed with PGAD was a long time coming. I see what they did there.
Yeah, C-U-M-M-I-N-G.
Yeah.
I think you only put one M there.
I know that, but... Okay.
Short OnlyFans creators.
Okay. Alright, here we go.
Here's what we've all been
doing. Why short OnlyFans creators are stomping their taller rivals with 1 4-foot star earning over $100,000 a month.
Well, their asses look bigger for one.
Size really does matter, but not how you think. When it comes to raking in cash on OnlyFans, new data from SuperCreator reveals that shorter women are stomping all over their taller rivals, earning up to 34% more subscribers, with fans who spend 30-45% more interaction and stick around nearly twice as long. And nobody knows that better than 4-foot firecracker Erica Calabrese.
4-foot firecracker. Well, that's usually how they come, small and... one big pound, they're done.
The 25-year-old Tampa, Florida native, who boasts 809,000 Instagram followers, hold on, that's going to be 10 in a minute, says her petite stature has been a major factor in her six-figure-a-month success. I had two options, either use my height to my advantage and make something of it, or give in to what society has stereotyped little people to be, which is just a punching bag for comedic relief, Calabrese told Jam Press. Nobody's laughing at her now, even as the site becomes more oversaturated. According to Calabrese, she's able to consistently reel in well over six figures a month.
I don't doubt it.
A pint-sized powerhouse says the fan requests are just as crazy as the paychecks. One of the more interesting things about doing OnlyFans is the people that are in my DMs, she said. I get wild messages from people. Most of it is just people trying to take me on dates or fly me to their country.
She fits in a overhead luggage
She noted that some of them are married celebrities with children, and some are college guys who want me to go to their frat parties. Others are old men who want to experience a little person, but ultimately many are just men who want to check me off their bucket list. Calabrese signed up...
Vernon Troy's been dead for a while. It's a scam.
Calabrese signed up for the site 5 years ago, swapping her $30,000 a year retail job at a furniture store for a salary she can now pull in within a week.
Let me get my stool. I'll show you how comfortable this couch is.
But she admits the fame comes with a price.
Where'd you get your furniture selling license? Ah, the Lollipop Guild. Oh, the Lollipop.
I face stigma within the industry because of my stature. People knowing that my conversation is better because of my height makes them think they can have a negative opinion of me, she said. They'll say she's only making that much because she's little, which is true, but that's nothing to be ashamed of. And while she's honored to know that she's inspired...
What's the girl with big tits making all that money for?
Right.
Oh, it's just because she had big tits. Yeah, and?
And while she's honored to know that she's inspired others like her to give the site a try, it's bittersweet knowing they might endure the same things I have to go through,
that's
she explained.
That's a pretty decent ask for a little person.
Calabrese acknowledged that while it's easy to start an account...
That's an app. That's a full-grown asshole and a half-sized woman.
Yes, they call them short stacks. And while she's honored to know that she's inspired others to give the site a try, it's bittersweet knowing that they might endure the same things I have to go through, she explained. Calabrese acknowledged that while it's easy to start an account, go viral, and make big money, the job comes with challenges, especially for someone already navigating the daily struggles of being part of a minority group.
We ran into my penis again? Oh my.
Yuval, CEO of SuperCreator, which lends AI-powered assists to OnlyFans stars, says Erica's story is part of a bigger shift on the platform. The data reveals a fascinating truth, Yuval said. Smaller creators, not necessarily by follower size, are converting better. Follower count has become irrelevant. What matters now is authentic differentiation and flawless execution. The top 1% aren't necessarily the most conventionally attractive. They're the ones who have mastered marketing and sales.
Doing the nastiest shit a lot of times.
Fans of that just aren't quite ready to admit who they're really attracted to, and a little person is the closest option that is legal. Nice job projecting your true interest to the world.
Well, I wouldn't even say it's because they're kid size.
Right.
A lot of it's a fetish, just as much a fetish as I like Asians. I think they're hot. But, some people, that ain't their thing. Some people like feet. I don't see the big deal. You see them for free in the summertime.
The positive is that those small hands will make my you-know-what look gargantuan, proving the old age that good things come in small packages.
Yep.
And when she's screaming something fierce, your very concept goes with the same situation. Talk about appeasing one's ego. I feel like a beast. They're magically delicious. And it is not considered cheating. It's good luck. Get 7 of them and you get a clean house, too. When
Tell
you fly,
me where the treasure is.
When you fly them out, they also travel free in the airplane's overhead bins, which is both cost and environmentally friendly.
Knew I was going to say that.
Beware the redheads. And when you're done, you can just slide her into the sock drawer for some quiet time.
With all the other... the casualties of war.
I know, the mental visualization is behind comical. Just having a little fun. Lucky Charms.
Oh, man.
Funny. Okay, so what is the last thing we got to talk about? Not that. We'll talk about that later. It is... Why do I care about that? Oh! I didn't care about that. That's not what we're talking about.
Fun anymore.
Oh yeah, we are going to talk about it. Hold on. First of all, let's talk about this. AOL discontinued its dial-up. And we're just surprised they even offered it in 2025. So I know you guys are going to be really upset about this. I know that some of you are still
really?
Hanging on with dial-up, you know.
Wow. Sound like a fax machine.
Dial-up's days are numbered after 34 years of service. 34 years of service.
Well, that stopped being relevant 10 years ago, maybe 20.
20? On September the 30th. No, not that long.
95
on September
2000, after 2000, it started. Well,
we had Ethernet. On September the 30th, AOL's dial-up holdouts will need to finally move on to another internet service. AOL announced this week that it'll be discontinuing its dial-up service next month. I'm so sorry, folks. Which probably isn't as surprising as the fact that AOL was still offering dial-up in 2025 to begin with. Dial-up usage has plummeted over recent years. Well, wow, I'm so shocked.
It's affordable to get real internet.
AOL has some 1.5 million dial-up users in 2015. Wow, that's surprising. But as of 2021, that number was reportedly in the low thousands. Low thousands? There was over 1,000 people still using it? So this change probably doesn't impact many people, but it's somewhat shocking that dial-up usage is...
It might have been very rural communities, possibly.
Possibly. Carried on for so long. AOL originally launched... Remember, we didn't have internet around here for the longest time.
Yeah.
Originally launched its dial-up service in 1991, meaning it will be 34 years old when it's finally shut down next month. Unfortunately, some of the people still using dial-up probably don't have many other options for internet. Broadband infrastructure is yet to make its way to some remote rural areas. Yep. The boonies.
There you go. All right. Solved the article.
If it is present, it's expensive. Many of the AOL customers who were still subscribed to its dial-up service likely stuck with it out of necessity. Luckily for those people, AOL isn't the only dial-up provider around. There's still a few others. However, ideally, efforts are made to continue expanding broadband access so people don't have to keep leaning on slow, outdated internet options like dial-up. An estimated 22.3% of Americans in rural areas and 27.7% of Americans in tribal lands still lack access to high-speed internet. In urban areas, only 1.5% of Americans face the same issue. For those of us who are used to having constant access to the high-speed internet, dealing with lag during an online multiplayer match might seem insufferable, but at least you're not still stuck on dial-up. Are you good? Is it still? It's cooling.
Indigestion.
Oh, indigestion now. I don't like that either.
No, I took my pill before I left.
I know that. I'm just saying I don't like it in general. I'm just pointing out the fact that I generally don't like indigestion.
I would hope you didn't. Are you pro-indigestion? What are you trying to tell me here? Indigestion sympathizer? Fuck you!
Okay.
Big indigestion propaganda.
Texas cop investigated after filming herself vowing to give more tickets because she hadn't had enough sex. A Texas police officer is under investigation for posting a TikTok vowing to issue tickets after she failed to have sex the night before. Jennifer Escalera has come. You will see.
I know, I saw the top of her head. Let's see what the rest of her
has
looks like.
Has come under fire over the since-deleted video that saw her writing on a notepad as she sat in her patrol car. Didn't get cracked last night, so everyone is getting a ticket, the Harris County Constable deputy wrote in the caption.
Part of the body most people see.
The phrase, getting cracked, is slang for having intercourse and has become popular among Gen Z. Content creators across various professions are posting TikToks highlighting their sex life, or lack of,
crack at it.
Has influenced their mood in the workplace. Escalera, whose TikTok account previously featured videos of her participating in viral trends while wearing police uniform, is now at risk of losing her job at the Precinct 5 Constable office.
So you can't role play. That's bullshit.
Our administration is aware an internal affairs is open investigation, a force spokesperson told KRIV.
I'm not trying to defund the police, by the way.
We have no other comment at this time. Residents in Harris County, which includes Houston, are outraged over the video, burning it inappropriate and disrespectful. Sworn into the force in September 2021, Escalera's social media account featured videos about being a mom and a female police officer.
I make her a mom. Play all that back 40. Yeah,
alright. Escalera blurred the portion of her uniform that stated what force she was affiliated with, but left her name visible, making identification easy. Members of the community have issued a harsh response to the videos, alleging that Escalera's a lack of respect for herself and the profession. It's very unprofessional, one local told the news outlet. When you're a professional, you carry yourself a certain way. What you do outside of work is cool, but I don't think she should have done that. Another resident said videos such as Escalera's make it hard for the public to take police officers seriously and suggest you can't rely on them. The local added that officers cannot demand the public's respect when you ain't treating yourself like a police officer. Escalera is not the only law enforcement member participating in the viral getting cracked TikTok trend. Another, identified only as Officer Cruz, posted a similar video but took the repercussions for her sexual frustrations even further. Didn't get cracked last night, so everyone is getting a ticket or going to jail, she wrote in the since-deleted video, OutKick reported.
I get a crack-a-lackin'.
Cruz, whose Force affiliation has not been disclosed, added, "All jokes except for the not cracked part, LOL." Similarly, female officer Cersei, who is romantically involved with a male officer, also jumped on the trend, reportedly posting on TikTok, "He got cracked before his shift. Everyone is getting off with a warning today." It is unclear which police forces Cersei or her partner worked for. Should Brady list this simpleton? Now every ticket she wrote can be challenged. Stupid. That is true.
She didn't suck my dick before she wrote the ticket.
Please tell me this lunatic is not allowed to carry a gun. She's not fit to be an officer. She should have been stuck with the
female officer.
She should have stuck with the strip club.
Hell yeah.
Obviously the police did not conduct IQ testing. DEI hire. It's Texas. They celebrate stuff like this. LOL.
They get hired at the same frequency people that don't want to do their job get hired at Walmart.
I'm 57 years old, but I have no idea why this younger generation feels like they have to share everything with the world and reinvent every word. I was in law enforcement for 47 years. She could joke about something like this in the squad room among themselves. But to put it on social media is stupid. Too stupid to be a police officer. It shows terrible judgment, and judgment is a huge part of the job of a police officer. I have no doubt she was joking and thought it was cute. Making it public is not cute. It's irresponsible, and she should be terminated.
Yeah, the old people that didn't have it, you know, the temptation's almost worse that it exists than any. I'm not saying I'd do it, because I'm probably in the generation that thinks it's stupid, but I can see being young and like, oh, this is going to be so cool. I ain't saying it's smart, but I can say the thought probably would flash around my head like, this will be hilarious. People are going to respond well to this at one time or another.
Billy Joel's ex-wife.
I mean, she got decent tits.
Yeah.
Decent face.
Okay, so that's all makeup, bruh.
So?
I know that.
You can paint a cow and it still makes a good ribeye.
I guess, yeah.
Oh, you're telling me you can paint a cow and it tastes just the same as if I just scorched it right pan seared it in butter and served it on a plate?
Physical media is cool again. Streaming services have themselves to blame. Right now, guys, you cannot watch Kurt's a Cowardly Dog anymore. It was taken off all streaming.
Oh,
yeah,
that's one of my brother's
favorites. It's gone. And there's a lot more that got taken off, too. So basically, a bunch of people have uploaded them to Internet Archive. So you can literally type in Kurt's a Cowardly Dog Internet Archive. And you can find it. I will show it to you. Oops, sorry, I hit that. But I'll show it to you.
Guess I got a lot of work to do tonight.
Just give me a minute.
There you
go. Okay. Right here, guys. So, there's an upscale now, but this is all of them. 57, okay, so they have only the AI upscale version, but they might have the... Okay, here's the original. You don't want the upscale. This is a 1080p upscale. Right here, 9.1 gigs. You can get this version. This is the one I downloaded. And also you can get... They had a different one. They had one that wasn't... It was like 40 gigs, but this one's 57 gigs. So this is an AI upscale. So keep in mind, there's two versions of these you can get. And also, because this shit happened, this person... I think it's Lou's Upscales. This guy right here, he's upscaling a lot of programs. X-Men, Marvel Anime, all this stuff he's upscaling, working on upscaling. Now, some of you guys may not like AI upscale, that's perfectly fine. But again, you guys can totally find a lot of these shows and all the Adult Swim shows like C-Lab and Lucy Daughter the Devil and all that kind of stuff that was just gone. You can't get it anywhere. Because when they got rid of all that stuff, they got rid of all the Cartoon Network shit, all the Adult Swim, all that stuff. You can't even get it on streaming anymore. that really sucks. Wonder if you can even find... I already have it, but...
Yeah, I've got it.
I know, but I don't know if I...
I don't know if I got courage or not.
Yeah, you do. Okay, this is DVD extra. Season 1. Okay, so unfortunately, Season 2, Disc 1... No, I'm not finding it there. They were trying to do it. It seems like you only have the DVD extras. So Metalocalypse you don't have, but all the other stuff that was released you do have. So you shouldn't have to worry too much about that. But alright guys, so that's what sucks as far as that's concerned. We'll get rid of that. We'll get rid of that too. Oh, well. Oh yeah, and by the way, since we're here, Rohan Carr... Still uploading, guys. Still new games. So he uploaded Family Guy Mortal Kombat Complete Edition. It's a full complete game. You just extract it and play. Street Fighter Tekken. Fantastic Four, if you remember this one. Back to the Future. Now this includes... The reason why I'm going to click on this is this includes both. Remember, you can't get this game anywhere.
Yeah.
It's been taken off completely. So, but this version of the game is different because they have both the 30th anniversary voiceover and then they have the original voiceover.
Yeah.
So you can get both versions of the game and they're completely different voiceovers. And then you have the Guardians of the Galaxy Telltale series. This was on GOG at one time along with the Back to the Future, but now they're gone completely.
Well, I've got it for PS5.
Well, I mean, but yeah, like I said, that game is going to be considered a rarity. Because you can't get it on anything anymore. They've taken all of those off. Guardians of the Galaxy you can't find, and you can't find Back to the Future. Those are games that have been...
I've got the hard copy, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, you better hope it doesn't get scratched or anything, because that's where we're at right now. But why I'm talking about all this is important, because physical media is cool again, and streaming services have themselves to blame. On August 4th, fans of the HBO Max series Love Life were given a gift. The television show was added to Netflix, a reprieve from the three-year drought that left fans unable to access the Anna Kendrick and William Jackson Harper-helmed anthology series. For creator Sam Boyd, having Love Life return to streaming has become a welcome change. In the time since its cancellation, fans have reportedly reached out to ask the best way to stream it. For a while, it was on HBO, then Amazon. Then for a time on Tubi with ads. He's glad people who love the show will have another chance to watch it again, but the experience has touched on why he stated, and still does, collect physical copies of his favorite shows and movies. I used to get DVD box sets of shows that I loved that had only been on for a season or two, he tells Rolling Stone. That was a formative thing for me. There was just something that felt fun and special. It made you feel like you saw something that was missed. It's no surprise, then, that at the same time, Boyd is hopeful that a new batch of Love Life heads are just a Netflix scroll away. Television film collector culture is having a resurgence online. When streaming services first took off in the mid-2000s, they promised consumers a new world, where movie night didn't have to start with a drive to Blockbuster and a pricey cable packages could be dropped without sacrificing your favorite shows.
Well, they took the good things about it and bastardized it.
Almost two decades later, streaming has become the default, not the scrappy competitor. According to Pew Research, close to 83%, that's a very high number, of adults in the U.S. subscribe to at least one streaming service, the number of which steadily grows. That's insane. 83% of people in this country are using streaming now.
Yeah, my parents are wanting to start.
These days, consumers aren't... We stream, but I still have my...
Stream.
Yeah. These days, consumers aren't entirely happy with the trade-off. Licensing deals mean the film that was on Netflix for 2 years can leave and take a spin on a platform you didn't pay for. That's true. My mother's always telling me, hey, this show isn't on there anymore. They want me to subscribe to this. They do that all the time.
Yeah, they swap it between streaming companies.
Make you pay for it. Make you
sometimes
pay everything.
Sometimes they don't even do that. Like, I'm still wanting to see Lost World. Never seen it.
Westworld.
See, it's gotten so bad I don't even remember the fucking name.
Licensing deals mean the film that was on Netflix for 2 years can leave and take a spin on a platform you didn't pay for. Older films can have controversial scenes edited out, or an original series can get canceled and disappear entirely. For many of these series, like Love Life, box sets or DVDs have never been available to purchase. That is true. Guys, some of these have no box sets. There's no way to get them at all.
Yeah. There's one channel I watch on YouTube that the dude tells you as the obscure movies do come out on Blu-ray, but the price of them is outrageous for what you're... the age of the movie and everything.
When it leaves a streamer, it visually disappears. It virtually disappears for the average consumer. It's gone. Physical media, on the other hand, doesn't have this issue. While streamers aren't necessarily losing customers, people who collect Blu-rays, DVDs, and VHS tapes tell Rolling Stone that their trending culture isn't nostalgia bait. As participating in the digital world while recognizing the value of holding something in their movie-obsessed hands. Gina Luzzi, 33, started her physical media collection without even realizing it. She grew up going to Blockbuster with her father for movie nights and has fond memories of strolling the aisles of Barnes & Noble for everything from books to CDs. But in 2018, she began to take collecting far more seriously. Her focus, cheesy 1980s Italian horror and murder mystery films, also known as giallos. Ooh, many of which aren't available.
I like some of those.
They are not. But they're on BitChute, and I'll bet you
what
are...
What is it, Elvira... Macabre Movie Theater has some of them on there.
Grindhouse a Go-Go on BitChute. He always puts that stuff on there, so check out Grindhouse a Go-Go here on BitChute. He has those kind of movies up there all the time. If I can find something that only one place has ever put out, or a movie that has just been restored for the first time in 30 years, that's so exciting for me, Luzzi tells Rolling Stone. Living in L.A., we're so spoiled when it comes to physical media. We have so many old theaters, video rental stores are still active, so many VHS-centered spaces. So my love for physical media is really tied into my love for L.A. For Maddie Graves, her physical media collection started with a frustration with streaming, rather. I got tired of paying for new streaming services, she says. 26. I can't justify having more than two or three. Why do I have to pay for Paramount Plus to watch Twin Peaks? Grace has always had a stack of DVDs in her home, but her collection changed when she found an old-fashioned tube TV with a built-in VCR. I had one of those! Now she seeks out VHS tapes of her most-watched films, her favorites of Rush Hour 1 and 2 and Silence of the Lambs. Grace thinks that the growth of physical media collectors comes from a lack of trust in streaming. I think the giant boom of physical media collecting is reflective of what's going on with the economy and how people feel about media in general. It's nice to have the certainty and less expensive, she says. Having a film in your collection versus the void of the internet, it just feels more secure. Starting a physical media collection can be as easy as walking into a Goodwill and buying Bring It On in a box set. Yup. Yep. But digital archivist K.D. Kemp says there's a real knowledge gap for newer generations whose growth has been defined by leaping advancements in tech. On TikTok, Kemp shares her tips and tricks for those who are interested in both collecting old media and finding ways to archive their favorite digital entertainment, like YouTube videos or unreleased songs. I get a lot of questions of, how do I get into this? There's a lot of curiosity about some older generations... Excuse me. There's a lot of curiosity about things some other older generations take for granted, she says. Like, how do you burn a CD? They don't know.
Oh, wow.
They don't know. It's something that was common for us growing up, but that's knowledge that's being lost as everything is sort of transitioning to digital. The obsession over obtaining physical copies of films have been driven in part by popular digital properties like Letterboxd and Criterion. Letterboxd is a film logging app where users can mark what movies they've seen, review them, and discover new ones they might like. Their TikTok interview series, Four Favorites, where celebrities are asked to name four favorite films on the spot, often goes viral. In a similar viral fashion, film company Criterion Collection has achieved massive success with their series of Criterion Closet, which invites the stars, directors, and writers to tour a closet stacked to the ceiling with DVDs to pick out their favorite movies. The series was such a hit, that the company now tours the Criterion van, a mobile closet, essentially, where fans wait hours in line to buy discounted DVDs and film their own version of the interview. Josu Arulano, 27, says a lot of his physical media collection is made up of Criterion titles because the company often re-releases and restores films he's been desperate to see, but hasn't been able to find. When the Criterion van had an event in June, he and a friend got there around 3:30 a.m. They were sixth in line. By the way, that movie Freaked, I just saw that they are putting that on Blu-ray after all these years. Freaked. We haven't watched it yet, but It was one that was, if we ever do the movies again.
The David Arquette?
No. This is, I'm not really sure on that one. But,
Freaks and Geeks.
No, Freaked. Freaked is the one. Also, some anime classics are getting remastered and put on Blu-ray. All right. Golden Boy is getting put on Blu-ray. All right. Yes. And it's being upscaled from the original remaster. Also, we're getting Monster on Blu-ray. All right. So those are some really good classic anime. Golden Boy is great.
Yep. Well.
All right, so even now in the age of streaming, it's so important to be able to own your media because you don't know what these companies can decide to do one day, he says. Even editing is a big thing.
I mean, we could have done a whole episode on this.
Yeah, we could have. Even editing is a big thing. How streamers will edit movies to be more child-friendly. It's censorship. What he's referring to is just one of several situations where digital copies of films have been adjusted to fit modern sensibilities.
Well, think about one that really stands out in my head is Django Unchained. Oh, Tubi took out the N-word.
Really?
Yeah, anytime the N-word, it was completely silenced from the movie. Like, you knew they said something, but you weren't sure what they said. And certain scenes were taken out, too.
Since 2023, Disney has been accused of editing several versions of their historic films, including Fantasia, Lilo and Stitch, and Star Wars. The NBC streamer Peacock removed multiple comedy episodes that used blackface, including The Office, 30 Rock, and Scrubs. Really?
Meh.
Streaming companies have called these changes important to remove inappropriate or hurtful content, but many collectors see the changes as essentially creating more lost media and forcing audiences to lose out on important content. Remember, your best weapon is the Internet Archive. I've already shown you the way. There's this false notion that everything is online and you can access everything. And that's not true, Kemp tells Rolling Stone. There's so much content that hasn't been digitized that isn't available online. We're still trying to do it.
Tom and Jerry's favorites on DVD, and they started out by getting Whoopi Goldberg to talk about how offensive the character Mammy was. But she was a leading character during a time when segregation was kind of...
That's true.
...out there. I mean, I don't think it was that offensive for the time. It was, language-wise, it was fairly accurate of the slang of the time. It didn't really paint her in a terrible picture neither, except for beating the crap out of cats.
Kemp tells Rolling Stone, there's so much content that hasn't been digitized that isn't available online, and what's happening now that's more common is things that were only ever digital have been taken away. They've been taken off of streaming services. Licenses have been revoked. Something has happened that has caused the content to come down, and now it's effectively gone. That's why piracy is so important. I say that, I mean, it's preservation. If somebody's putting something up there that doesn't have a physical copy, there's no way you can buy it. That's preserving it.
Yeah. That's how it should be viewed.
Exactly. One of the loopholes, and of course, Congress is trying to pass the Blockbeard Act, which is basically going to make it so that your ISP blocks piracy sites. It'll forcibly block piracy sites so that you won't be able to access them. Now, the thing about piracy sites is they're hydras. So when one goes down, a bunch more, if they get blocked, there'll be others that go up, and it'll be
more
just a losing battle.
Surface.
Mm-hmm. They don't want us to be able to have this content. They don't want us to be able to preserve this content. Yeah, and that is
crazy.
Dangerous.
Well, yeah, that gets into communism.
Don't even think about that. We're talking about news that can essentially just be gone. Like, you won't even know it exists. A generation can come out and not have the ability to go back and see old news broadcasts or read old news that's completely gone because they've simply decided there's no need to store it or keep it.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
Well, I think history should be preserved.
Absolutely. And this stuff is part of history.
Right in the history.
And this stuff is part of history.
Yeah.
There are always going to be people, and especially young people, who are curious about the past, he says, who are interested in the whole history of incredible movies and shows and albums. I meet them all the time. That's the kind of kid I was, so it makes sense that those kids still exist. The idea that people would only want the new thing forever just has not been the case. There's always going to be some people that want to zag, and he's right. We've got to keep this stuff going.
The government shouldn't be in charge of what we preserve.
If there's anything I want to be known for, it's keeping things preserved. What you guys don't know about is I also do a very, very deep archive of classic indie comic books. You can get them pretty easily with digital, but I'm also doing scans. I'm doing physical only scans. There's a lot. They were only scanned.
Yeah.
There's no digital version.
Yeah.
And there will probably never be a digital version.
I understand that.
So people are actually...
Digital versions are, I mean, not super new, but they're fairly new in the whole history of comics.
So people are actually, you know, seeing this stuff for the first time somewhat, and they're very interested in it. And I had this guy message me, and he says that, hey, we're doing a audio of the Go-Go Power Rangers comics here in Brazil, and we want to know if we can use some of your caps in your video, like some of the screens today. And I was like, dude, I don't have the rights to any of this shit. I don't own any of it. You don't have to ask me for anything. If you want to put a link to my channel, go ahead. But as far as the rest of the stuff, I don't own this shit. This is all you. Like, this is an archive for people. That's what I'm trying to do. We're trying to keep this stuff alive.
Sharing it with the world.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's more important than anything else right now. If there's anything I've done in my life that I think is worth, like, that is like a noble deed, it would be preserving this stuff. Because that's what I think is more important than anything right now. The fact of the matter is, we've moved so far that there is stuff that people will never see. And I always try to make sure I get as much of it. Because when they pass Blockbeard, it's going to be really hard to get stuff. But it's very important for you guys to actually go looking for things, you know. Because there's classic movies. And I've noticed from some of the sites that I use that they're putting up a lot of classic movies, a lot of classic comedies.
Yeah.
They're putting up a lot of classic comedies with Adam Sandler, early Adam Sandler, early Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't even know these movies exist. They've never seen The Cable Guy. They've never seen Ace Ventura.
I don't see how you could.
They've no, these kids are so new to the world, they've never seen this stuff.
I have noticed at
so,
like, we knew what happened decades before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, kids nowadays don't know happened 10 minutes before they were born, much less.
I know. And it's really bad. But they want to know. There's a yearning where some of them are like, hey, I discovered Beavis and Butthead, man. That was just really freaking great.
Yeah.
Like, I'm loving this show. I'm like, I'm so glad to hear that you guys are liking this stuff, right?
I got a message from my brother today. He said, please don't show Happy Tree Friends to my niece anymore.
Right.
Because she came back to the house and that's all she talked about for the next couple days.
The Happy Tree Friends was like the blood and the gore and the violence?
Yeah, it was like the Happy
show,
but it's always, they're always getting dismembered and all this. Well, she's into like Wednesday and spooky stuff. Apparently there's a thing called Huggy Wuggy. It's like a blue demon monster.
She
wants a stuffed version of that and all that. And I was telling her the story of how Lucifer got thrown out of heaven. And, you know, used to be God's favorite angel and all this. And then when he got cast out, the people that followed, or the angels that followed him, became demons. And she wanted to know all about demons. Well, we're over at the house, and my mom was using the phone. And my house is really old, so it creaks and all this. But she got up to see...
Lord.
Let me know she's off the phone with our cousin from California. And when my niece screamed bloody murder, and I laughed for a good 5-6 minutes. It was so funny. I was like, you think I was gonna let something get you?
Oh, man. But all right, yeah, that's one way to scare the crap out of him.
Of course, my grandpa, when I was taking care of him, he had Alzheimer's. He saw kids with evil faces running all through the house.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right, so...
I don't remember too many evil kids allowed in my house.
So, also, the White House did this big old guaranteed fair banking for all Americans. We're not
fair
reading this.
Fair banking or fair banking?
Fair banking. We're not... He hasn't done that yet. Fair.
Hey, it should be fair to bang anybody you feel like you should be able to bang. Just grab a hip and go to
I don't think... God, people would expect that.
But go up and grab her by the pussies. Articled at least 13 times.
Oh, Lord. All right, so...
Can't get away, I grab you by the pussy. In fact, that's where the main pressure point is.
On that note, this is the Grim Lord, and we'll see you guys next time on the Grim Articles Show. I am out.
Later.
Enjoy the decline.